Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. In his new book, The Age of Empathy, Nature's Lesson for a Kinder Society, Franz Dewahl, primatologist, discusses some concepts of value to all owners of companion animals and all those who work with those animals and their owners. One of these is mood contagion. Mood contagion is a survival mechanism, but it's also empathy in action. It behooves members of a group to pay attention to what the other members are doing and to mimic the mood and the behaviors and the physiological changes that go with it when these are displayed by a role model. If a mother or an adult curls up for a nap, so do the youngsters. If more superior members of the pack or the parent lifts their head as if there's danger, it's definitely to the advantage of any young or subordinates to do the same thing. And it works at the other end, too. When animals are being playful, it's hard for other animals not to join in and play. And we're the same, too. When other people are laughing, we have to work really hard not to laugh. And when they yawn, well, we all know how difficult it is not to yawn when we see somebody else yawning. So that's mood contagion. And that's also empathy, the ability and the willingness to do this. I mentioned the word role model. Obviously, you can't figure out what certain body language expressions mean and the proper response to them unless you're paying attention to someone. And in the process of doing that, you figure out who knows what they're doing and who doesn't, who it's beneficial to mimic or follow and who it isn't. As a function of this, learning by modeling is deeply entrenched in animal species. To prove this, those who study primates have come up with a series of experiments that are referred to as the ghost box experiments. In these experiments, rewards are put in boxes, and then the primates, chimpanzees, are given the opportunity to observe the box opening automatically all by itself, and also the opportunity to see another individual open the box. As it turns out, chimps can watch boxes open by themselves time and time again, and they'll never figure it out. But let them see somebody else open the box, and they catch on very quickly. In a way, a lot of the way we train animals is ghost box training. We give a command that we hope or we expect them to figure out, and maybe wave our hunk of chicken. And then it's up to them. It's up to them to figure out the ghost box in our mind, to make the translation between that word sit and something that makes sense to them. And if they guess right, then we reward them. Which goes to show how closely animals, and particularly those who live with us 24/7 like our dogs and cats, have learned to pay attention to our body language, how empathetic they have become relative to us in order to successfully live with us without causing themselves an unbearable amount of stress. So now we have mood contagion, and we have the idea of learning by mimicking, and then we come to embodied cognition. Embodied cognition is one of my favorites. It's when you're so close to that other that you can't help but want them to succeed. And a really good example of this is if you've ever been a parent or an aunt or an uncle or just gone with a favorite little kid to a school play or a soccer game or someplace where you really wanted that child to succeed. And how when they're reciting their lines, or they're singing their song, or they're making their play, you feel yourself silently mouthing the words, or fingering the instrument, or holding your leg to kick the ball just so. That's embodied cognition. And again, think about the way we train animals. Some people stand there like sticks and give the command. They establish eye contact, and they give the command. Nothing. No, no mood recognition. No imitation. No embodied cognition. And as a result of that, no body mapping. No sense of oneness. No sense of identity with an animal. I might even go so far as to say, no really decent bond with that animal. Because that's what the bond is about. It's about becoming one. It's about getting the knowledge to understand that dog or that cat or that horse's body language every bit as intimately as they've had to learn to understand ours in order to survive. And maybe if we think that we're at the top of the pyramid and we don't have to do that, that's their responsibility, not ours, that's okay. But when we think that we're too good or we're too busy to make the effort to learn and think about animals and how they perceive the world and what certain behaviors mean to them, well, sometimes that can backfire. We can think that it doesn't matter, and we can think that our animals aren't aware of it, but a New Yorker cartoon summed up a possibility that I don't think we can overlook. In the cartoon, a man is kneeling in front of his dog, holding out a biscuit with one hand and giving the up signal with the other. The dog is sitting with his paw raised, and above the dog is a little bubble, and inside the bubble, we discover that the dog is thinking, I'm not giving you the paw, I'm flipping you the bird. Life is so much more exciting with animals when it's two-way instead of one-way. They don't need our pity. They need our empathy.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.